NSYNC didn't give their fans as many albums as the Backstreet Boys did, but the three they put out were pop perfection, okay? Tight harmonies, catchy choruses, iconic music videos full of dance moves.
Airing every day from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Well, just think about what a 2015 NSYNC would look like. It would look pretty great. I would certainly pay to watch Joey Fatone
and Lance Bass,
J.C. Chazez, Chris Kirkpatrick.
Nobody knows where J.C. Chavez or
and
Chris
of course, how about Justin Timberlake?
There we go.
Well, that's the first time I had to mention
you
him, isn't
think
it?
That's the big Trump card.
Well, it kind of is.
You know
it
what? You know what the 2018 NSYNC would look like? The same thing that the 1999 NSYNC looked like, which is Justin Timberlake with a bunch of losers.
I'm 1340 WKGN.
Hey, I'm Cody. Hey, hey, sexy back. You ever heard of sexy back?
Tearing up my heart.
Hour two kicking off in the Fan Run Studios. Our hour two headlines are brought to you by our friends, the McKinney Team, with Keller Williams. Been telling you about our friends at the McKinney Team with good reason. I trusted them. They helped me find a new home. I love my new home. I want to help you experience that same joy. Or, if you want to sell your home, they can do that too. ZillowKnoxville.com to view their listings or become more familiar with them. Facebook, Travis and Emily McKinney, Keller Williams, 865-548-8267. The McKinney Team with Keller Williams, Cody McClure, Hour 2 Headlines, Collision Course, right now! Right now!
Thank you, John. Every time I try to open a new window, I keep getting cricket scores. I don't know if that's supposed to be some kind of a message from Google that we need to talk more cricket or what, but...
You're welcome.
Really weird. Clint Capella says a Warriors rematch is, quote, what I want. The Rockets are ready for the Golden State Warriors. That's what I want. I want to face them again, Capella said. That is the plan for the Rockets. James Harden declined to answer a question about the Warriors in the wake of the Rockets grinding out a 193 win in Game 5 Wednesday to eliminate the Jazz, saying he would wait and see what happened in the series with the Clippers. That was Chris Paul's plan, too, but Capella gave us a little honesty. Said, yeah, give me the Warriors.
The Rockets are going to beat them.
You've said that.
I stand by it.
I've heard you say it.
And I stand by it. The Rockets are going to beat the Warriors.
I mean, if the Clippers can beat them twice, it kind of makes you think, right?
I mean, yesterday was not a good start to the game for James Harden. He started the game 1-for-11, and everyone's like, ah, James Harden choking again. And then he went 9-of-15 and closed out the Jazz. Good to see Harden kind of shake that choking, you know, just they lose game 4 while up 3-0, and everyone brings up the choking narrative. It was good for him to look and start 1-of-11 and then be like, you know what, actually, I'm really good. Let's start scoring again. The Rockets are going to beat the Warriors. I felt that way when they had DeMarcus Cousins. They lost DeMarcus Cousins, and I feel that way more than ever. They can't guard Lou Williams. Why should I think they can guard James Harden? And again, before the playoffs started, I told you, I kind of think the Rockets getting the 4 seed is actually going to help them because James Harden and Chris Paul are going to be fresher in round 2 than they are in round 3. Chris Paul can't make it through the playoffs without getting hurt. Now they get him around earlier. They get rid of the Jazz in 5 games. Now they get to rest. That was a bad loss for the Warriors last night because now they have to go back to LA, which granted, not a far trip. It's in state. It's not like they have to travel, you know, a couple time zones over or thousands of miles. They don't have to do that, but they have to keep playing while the Rockets rest. Rockets are going to beat them. Gonna
I'm
happen.
Excited for the series.
It's going to happen. If the Clippers don't get them first.
Did you see that quote that Damian Lillard sent to Russell Westbrook? I know that happened a couple of days ago.
No, man. Like,
I don't know if we talked about that quote.
Which one?
The, like, ancient Chinese proverb.
Dude, there's been so many of them. One of the best things I've ever read. That might be a little strong. strong, although I don't feel like it's strong, but I'll just back it off. The best thing I've read in 2019 was the Yahoo Sports piece on Damian Lillard yesterday. Did you read that?
I have not read that.
I linked it yesterday on Twitter. It came out basically right after he broke the hearts of the Thunder. And Damian Lillard just looked like an assassin. It talked about how they sat around after their game four, as they're heading into game five. He said they're all at his house watching the Jazz and Rockets. And how it was quiet, everybody's just sitting there, and then all of a sudden Damian Lillard just looked over and said, "I'm getting rid of these mother bleepers tomorrow." Talking about the Thunder. Went on in the story and was talking about basically his beef with Westbrook. I don't know if you saw it. Did you see? Because they got into it all series.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the place when Russell Westbrook hit a three on him and then started rocking the baby?
I believe I saw
basically implying he's too small. He's a little baby. They asked Lillard about that. He's like, "Hey, he was doing that on jump shots. That's not when you rock the baby. You rock the baby when you overpower someone in the post. And he ain't doing that into me in the post. Look it up. He hit one layup on me. He wasn't rocking no baby on me." Said, "I'm not going to pay attention to what he's doing. It's cool. He does it every game. I don't celebrate in someone's face. I'm not going to say some wild stuff. I think with him, he's pounding his chest, talking bleep, and that's what gets him going. That's the difference between us." They asked him about Westbrook. Some clips of Westbrook. Westbrook calling him the B word, if you will. And Lillard's like, "Ah, that's just the way I see it. It's basketball. I know I ain't no bleep ass mother bleeper, so it doesn't bother me. I'm not out here trying to prove to these dudes that I'm the hardest mother bleeper in the league because they cussed at me on the basketball court. But they know where I'm from and what I'm about, this Oakland. But I don't take this personal. My goal is to get the win." Then they talked about Lillard sitting in there with all his friends, showing a clip from social media of Damian Lillard on the court. You could see him saying to Westbrook, "Stop running from this ass whooping," as Westbrook kept switching off of him and making Paul George guard Damian Lillard. I mean, there was a stat from just game five, the closeout game. Russell Westbrook guarded Damian Lillard for 21 possessions, and Damian Lillard scored 20 points. Not 21 shots, just 21 possessions where he was the closest guy to Lillard, and Lillard scored 20 points on him. Lillard might have dropped 100 on him. The idea is that you get close to 100 possessions in a basketball game. So if you just get 100 possessions playing Russell Westbrook, he would have scored 100 points on him.
So with you have a newfound respect for Damian Lillard with your...
I mean, he's just a killer, man. And then he dropped this quote that you're talking about. Like, he still kind of twists the knife a little bit. He had the idea, you know, after the game he said, "Look, Westbrook's been saying he's been busting my ass all my career. He had the chance to prove it on the biggest stage, and you saw what happened."
I don't think Westbrook can really come back from that, can
he? No, it's over. And like I said, congratulations to Damian Lillard. He is now officially in my top 10 best players in the NBA. He has taken the place of Russell Westbrook. He is the second best point guard in the league.
It is the unemotional, reserved, calm, detached warrior who wins. Not the hothead seeking vengeance and not the ambitious seeker of fortune. That's from Sun Tzu in The Art of War. Apparently that was like a Chinese book. He's a general. I don't think it's an old proverb. I saw that it was a Chinese quote and I immediately said it's an old ancient proverb, which is probably not accurate. I think it's just a quote from a Chinese war general. Joe Biden has announced his presidential run for 2020. Probably the biggest Democrat in the field now, right?
I don't think he's going to win.
No, he's not going to win.
The Democratic nomination, though. He is the biggest name right now, but, I mean, I guess, is his name bigger than Bernie at this point?
I mean, he's been at it longer.
I feel like Bernie's name's bigger than Biden's at this point. Like, I don't know if Bernie will win. I'm just saying, like, I feel like he's a bigger name than Biden.
Who do you think will get the nomination for the Democrats?
Really don't know.
I don't either.
I thought everybody, it seems like they're all just going to cannibalize each other right now. We'll see who's left standing. But, you know, just not to get overly political, although it is fascinating. But to me, it felt like the Democratic Party was trying to go young and progressive. And nothing screams young and progressive like a 76-year-old.
But by the time he took office, Joe Biden would be 78.
A 78-year-old white man. That doesn't really scream progressive and forward-thinking. which, again, is what the Democrats have been trying to kind of push. You've seen them go younger.
And yet
I thought it was going to be Beto, is that how you pronounce it? I thought it was going to be Beto.
I don't know. He's the guy from Texas, right?
Yeah. I thought he was going to be the one that kind of everyone put their support behind. It doesn't seem like that's going to happen anymore. I don't know. I just don't feel like it's Biden.
I don't think they've got anybody interesting enough to beat Trump.
We'll see.
We will see what happens.
I mean, the debates would be all time.
With Trump and...
Trump and creepy Joe Biden.
Trump and Bernie would probably be the best if we're just looking for entertainment value. Right?
I mean, I think Bernie would run circles around Trump in a debate, though. Yeah. I don't know what he would really make fun of Bernie about, I guess is what I'm saying.
Oh, he would make fun of
I guess he would talk about them being a one percenter and always railing against the 1%. I guess that would be the move.
You're a socialist.
I guess that, and then, you know, talking about, hey, you want everybody to be equal, yet you have three houses type of thing. Like, that might have some ammunition. I'm just talking about, like, personal insults. The creepy Joe Biden stuff would become next level. Like, you saw the video he put out of Joe Biden massaging Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Like, that, I'm just talking about content-wise.
I don't think it would be as good still as the Trump-Hillary debates. Those were fun.
I don't know, man. There's been times when Joe Biden and Trump have talked about fighting each other.
That's true.
I mean, you can't fight Hillary.
So is that what we're hoping for, Trump and Biden?
I don't know. I mean, to
go at it?
I don't know. Do we want to run that back just in terms of I want our presidential debates to be entertaining? Like, they're like must-see TV in 2015.
That's what it's about now. Forget running the country.
Or 2016, I guess I should say.
Forget who leads the country. That's not important. We're looking for entertainment value here.
Those debates were must-see TV.
And that
was Talking Politics with John and Cody. Got any more headlines?
Yeah, the Hurricanes. Big double overtime win last night to knock the Caps out of Game 7 of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I actually watched the last, the overtime and the third period of this game. So it was a good game. The Hurricanes won.
Yeah, it's the first time. I saw this stat on the bottom of ESPN. Said that... It's the first time that the defending champ's been knocked out in the first round. I was like, oh, since when? Like, since 2016. I was like, not really that long.
That's not really a good stat.
That's not really a stat that you look at and say, wow, that's only like, what, three playoffs?
Yesterday, the Caps had this this tweet that was like basically like they were Jon Snow. Did you see that?
Yeah.
And then the Hurricanes said bend the knee.
What was it they said? Time to come take back what's ours or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. And then the Hurricanes quoted it and said, just bend the knee.
And then Washington went with real classy Carolina.
Yeah, like it was.
Got their feelings hurt.
Yeah, like it wasn't a Game of Thrones reference.
Real classy.
Big win for the Hurricanes, though.
It is cool to see Nashville front and center on ESPN and all the Titans gear. That is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Of course, they got their guitars up there because, you know, gotta keep with the theme, right?
They had Kid Rock as a representative of Nashville earlier, which is kind of funny, I guess.
Might as well be.
Might as well. Stick with us as Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. It's cool to see Nashville and the Titans front and center. Derrick Henry on the set right now on ESPN. Apparently, Cody, and I kind of refuse to acknowledge this too much, but some people are linking the Tennessee Titans with taking Drew Lock in the first round. Drew Lock to the Titans.
And you wouldn't be happy about that?
I don't think I would be. I mean, I'm not married to the idea of Marcus Mariota as the franchise quarterback, right? Like, I am not a Marcus Mariota believer. I don't necessarily want to get rid of him, but I think this year is a prove-it year. But taking Drew Lock does not seem like the move. Maybe that's a move where you could let Drew Lock sit for a year. Maybe he could be the franchise quarterback. I don't know. But I've gone through this whole draft process, and it might be a part of the reason why I'm not crazy about this year's draft, because I feel like John Robinson, that's the Titans general manager, I feel like he has earned my trust when it comes to making draft picks, at least near the top of the draft. I feel like his picks the last couple of years have been really good. Corey Davis, Adoree Jackson. I liked Rashawn Evans last year. They traded up to get Harold Landry in the second round. Like, I feel like they've done a good job. I feel like they'll find somebody good in the, you know, the 18, 19, 20 range, or they'll trade back and get extra assets. Really, there's no pick that they could make that I would be like, ugh, to, except maybe drafting Drew Lock. I think that would really upset me. I just don't think he's a franchise quarterback. And if you have someone who might be a franchise quarterback in Marcus Mariota, I feel like that is a wasted draft pick.
Well, what do you know about Drew Lock that you really don't like?
What do I know about Drew Lock that I do like would be the question.
Is there anything?
I mean, it's just – I mean, he's got a good arm, I guess. I mean, it's just – I don't know what – does he do anything that stands out to you? And again, I've acknowledged that I'm not – I don't have a great track record of picking these quarterbacks.
The only
I was a part of the people who said Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, both of those are can't-miss guys. They're going to be great, and both of them have been pretty average.
The only thing I know for sure about Drew Lock is that he took Derek Dooley's advice to not change his sandwiches up.
That's true.
He orders the sandwich how it is on the menu because that's how it's supposed to be. Which I like that about him if it's at a local place. You know, now if you're like at a Subway or a, you know, Firehouse, whatever, it's okay to customize there, I think. But at a local place, I agree with that method. And I know that seems like a small thing, but maybe that could tell us something about him as a quarterback.
I don't know. I mean, on one hand, you are loyal to your sandwich. On the other hand, you're, you know, taking advice from Derek Dooley.
But you're not going to do anything special.
Just a bland man.
Would you rather have a quarterback who went in and said, hey, give me some strawberry jam on my ham sandwich? A guy who's a little, I don't know, that guy might just be erratic with the ball. That guy's probably going to have a lot of turnovers, isn't he? I don't know. I don't know if the two things relate.
I just don't want to waste a draft pick on Drew Lock. I think where I'm at right now as a fan is that I will ride with Marcus Mariota one more year, and if you don't want to give Marcus Mariota big money, let's go all out and tank. I think the NFL season 2 years from now is going to be a bunch of teams trying to bottom out. You're going to have four teams go between 0-16 and 2-14 as they try to position themselves for Trevor Lawrence.
Which is going to be a hot commodity. That might be the move for the Titans.
My friend TC, Volunteer Vodka, he said he's coming by the studio bringing some vodka, by the way.
Today?
Yeah. He's headed to Nashville.
Oh, nice.
He's headed to the draft.
I think I'm going to go to Nashville, too.
He told me, he's like, yeah, he's a Dolphins fan. He said, I just want the Dolphins to go 0-32 for Trevor Lawrence. And I said, you know what? I think I'd be okay if the Titans just said, you know what? We're going 0-32. We're going for Trevor Lawrence. I think if you really put it to me and said, hey, you're guaranteed Trevor Lawrence, but you're going to not win a game for 2 years, I think I would say, you know what? Let's do it.
You'd definitely take 0-16.
Yeah. And, like, you know, 2 years for me would be a little extreme. Now, for him, the Dolphins, like, the Dolphins stink. That's what the Dolphins are doing. They're trying to bottom out. So, for the Dolphins, it makes sense. Like, you're not throwing away this year. Whereas the Titans, I think, can make the playoffs this year. So, throwing away this year would be really tough for me. But, again, I think that you go in with Marcus Mariota, and if it doesn't work, you get rid of him, and you don't do anything good at quarterback next year, and you really try to bottom out. You go 1 year full tank.
You think that's the move?
I think so. I mean, that's what I hope the Titans do. Try this year. I want Marcus Mariota to succeed. I want Mariota to be the franchise quarterback. Get him weapons. Hell, if you have to draft Hollywood Brown in the first round to give him a deep threat receiver with Corey Davis, fine with me. We'll call him Broadway Brown, and he will be my guy.
Be pretty nice to have him.
Agree. Now, some people say, the Titans don't need to draft a receiver. I'm just like, do what you got to do. I'm not going to be mad about anything except drafting a quarterback in the first round at this point. I just don't feel like any of them are good enough.
Well, is it possible that the Titans could end up with Tua instead of Trevor Lawrence?
No.
You don't think this year could be bad enough?
I don't think there's any way the Titans are picking in the top five. I mean, just because in years past, I would say, yeah, if Marcus Mariota gets hurt in game one or two and you have to start Blaine Gabbert, you're probably going to be in trouble. But this year with Ryan Tannehill, I think Ryan Tannehill is good enough to drag you to five or six wins. With the Titans have a good roster. Their roster is not bad.
I mean, the thing is, can you hold out for 2 years, though, roster?
Like I said, I don't actually want to go 0-32, but I would have to think about it. If I'm someone like the Dolphins who aren't trying this year, yeah, let's suck for 2 years.
If it meant you could get Trevor Lawrence, because all everything coming out on Trevor Lawrence that we've seen, he's going to be the best quarterback prospect since at least Andrew Luck.
Sure. I mean, he'd probably be the number one pick in this year's draft, right?
I think, oh, yeah.
I mean, if Kyler Murray's going to go, you'd rather have Trevor Lawrence than Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
And at the very least, he's a top five pick because he's better than Dwayne Haskins. Sucks for him that he can't go pro.
Yeah, it really does. That guy should not have to wait for two more years to go pro. But maybe he'll be even better.
I say you go all in with Mariota this year. And like I said, if that includes you getting a wide receiver with pick number one, I'm okay with it. Go all out because I do think the roster is good. I do think the Titans can be a playoff team. I would just be really – the only way I'm going to be mad coming in tomorrow is if we take Drew Locke or Daniel Jones. Or trade up for someone like Dwayne Haskins. That would also make me angry. Like if Dwayne Haskins is there at 19, I'm fine with taking him. I don't want to trade up for him. That's the only thing that's going to make me angry.
Ideally, you'd rather build other assets instead of drafting a quarterback, right?
Well, I mean, that's why I keep coming back to Arizona. It's like, guys, you need a lot of things. Like, Washington's the same way. Washington, why are you going to trade up for a quarterback when your whole team sucks?
I feel like it's better to build around the quarterback that you've got and then get the quarterback.
Agree.
That makes it easier if you just need one guy versus building a roster because then you could get your quarterback hurt.
Now, unless you don't have a quarterback. I think if you're picking at the top of the draft and you don't have a quarterback, you get the quarterback. I'm saying you don't do what Washington is threatening to do, which is trade up from 15 and draft a quarterback that we don't know if is any good. Like if you're trading up like Kansas City did a couple years ago for Mahomes and you have a good roster and you're like, hey, this guy's a superstar in the making, trade up for him.
If you believe you've got a guy like that this year.
Like all Kansas City gave up to trade up. They traded their 27th pick. They traded a first-round pick the next year and a second-round pick. That's well worth the cost of having Patrick Mahomes.
Hell yeah, it's
worth it. And you had a roster to go around it. It wasn't like you needed to build other things. You said, hey, we're dropping him in there, and we're going to throw the ball to these wide receivers we already have, and the defense, I will figure it out. Washington's not in that position. I don't think Arizona's in that position. If I'm Arizona, I keep coming back to, man, Josh Rosen isn't bad. Josh Rosen was pretty decent last year with no offensive line. If Cliff Kingsbury is the offensive genius everyone keeps claiming he is, why are we having to start over with a quarterback? And why did you hire Cliff Kingsbury? Can someone ask Arizona that? Like, why did you hire a coach who you don't think could make your franchise quarterback good? Apparently, you have to have Kyler Murray to run this offense. How good is this offense? Like, to me, the idea of being a great offensive coach is I could take anybody and make them good. I can improve whatever you have and make them better. Is that not what we think of as good coaches? Someone who could take average players and make them good, take good players and make them great, take great players and make them Hall of Famers? Like Bill Belichick, imagine how silly he would sound. I was like, yeah, I'm a defensive mastermind, but I got to have Lawrence Taylor. I really need some Hall of Fame defensive players. No, Bill Belichick's like, yeah, we'll figure it out in draft. We'll take unsigned free agents. I'll take Troy Brown, my wide receiver, and I'll make him play quarterback, and we'll figure it out. That's how you are if you're a great coach. I don't understand why Arizona would hire Cliff Kingsbury, A, if he can't work with Josh Rosen, B, if he has to have Kyler Murray to succeed. To me, that's more about, hey, you maybe you're not as smart as you think you are.
That kind of goes back to your, like, you got to, like, a good coach will show you that they're a good coach in year two. Like, the whole, like, getting your own guys in there is just BS. Because if you're a good coach, you can win with the guys there. You'll elevate your players.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's how it is. I mean, the NFL is a little different because you're on more of a playing field. Playing field, like, everyone's got the same salary cap. Whereas in college, you have to kind of acknowledge recruiting. And you can be far behind. So, you know, with Pruitt, we're not talking about year two, you have to go out and win the East. We're not saying that, but in year two, I would expect you to be able to beat the teams that you have more talent than. Which, of course, is the Missouris, the Kentuckys, the Vanderbilts. Like, by year two, your players should be coached up and made better. Now, like I said, the NFL is a little different because it's more of an even playing field. I think good NFL coaches show you in year one they're better. Usually, but definitely by year two in the NFL as well. But yeah, year one, you usually see an impact because the talent level on the team is so comparative that coaching, it makes the difference in the NFL. Talent makes the difference in college for the most part.
Just look at Alabama and Clemson.
Right. But we call Saban and Dabo the best coaches, but a lot of it's because of the talent. And in college, you have to go get the talent. You're not beholden to a GM and an organization and draft picks and all that. You go pick your team.
That's part of coaching.
Sure.
In college.
Right.
Going and recruiting those guys. You get the credit for that, for being a good coach.
Right. Everyone looks at, oh, Chris Peterson, look what he does with the talent he has. And then you always come back to, well, if he's really good, he should get more talent.
Yeah, Chris Peterson's never going to win anything of substance.
I just get mad about this Cliff Kingsbury thing. I just can't. I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around Josh Rosen, who a lot of people thought was the best quarterback in the draft last year. A lot of people thought Josh Rosen was good. I didn't think Josh Rosen was bad this year when he played. Seems to me like as a fan of Arizona, I would look and say, man, we got too many holes to be using the most valuable thing in sports, which is the first overall NFL pick, to be using that to take a quarterback that isn't Trevor Lawrence or Peyton Manning or Andrew Luck.
You took a first-round quarterback last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you want to become the new Cleveland?
Now, again, if it's Trevor Lawrence, I look and I say, yeah, I want this guy. This guy is a franchise changer. Maybe Kyler Murray is. Maybe his combination of speed, athleticism, and arm strength is going to make him a really, 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 really good NFL player. Maybe.
Do we really think the difference between Kyler Murray and Josh Rosen is worth a number one pick? A number one pick in the NFL draft.
Not only number one pick, Cody. Look at what you could get if you trade number one.
Right.
It's not even
many more assets for a team that's bad.
It's not even a number one pick. It's a number one pick. It's an extra first round pick, an extra second round pick.
Yeah. Is Kyler Murray really the guy you're going all in on to be that much better than Josh Rosen, the first round quarterback you drafted last year?
Now, maybe on the flip side, maybe this year in the NFL draft, there's not a big move, a big rush to get to number one because it feels like everyone looks around and says, the top three picks are pretty interchangeable when it comes to Josh Allen, the linebacker from Kentucky, Nick Bosa, the defensive end that was at Ohio State, then quit on his team, and then Quinnen Williams, the defensive tackle from Alabama. Like, everyone kind of looks and says, all three of those guys are studs. Some people think Quinnen Williams is the best player in the draft. Whatever. All three of those are pretty interchangeable. So maybe no one's going to be in a huge rush to pass up. Even at number five, Devin White, the linebacker from LSU, he might be the best defensive player in the draft. Whenever you look at the new age NFL, that's all sideline to sideline, quick passing, getting the ball to the running backs. Like, Devin White can play that type of linebacker that gets sideline to sideline. So maybe there's not a big rush to move up. I don't know. I would question my organization if they were taking Kyler Murray number one overall after taking Josh Rosen at 10. I would question them for hiring Cliff Kingsbury whenever apparently he can only make it work with Kyler Murray. I would just have a lot of questions. Stick with us. We'll get to Cam's movie reviews next. Stick with us as Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. Back on the program. All right, Cam, let's get ready for some movie reviews. We got to blow through this. Before Cam gets started, Cody, shout out to Cody McClure.
Yeah.
Look at the hat topics. We got 25 hat topics in here, it feels like.
They're all good, too.
Cam, what movie do we have up?
Black Panther.
Black Panther?
Yep.
Ben, have you tweeted out the Periscope link? Make sure to tag me, please.
So what are we doing? The hat first?
We're going to get the hat. Me and you're going to talk about the hat as he's doing it. I mean, we're going to roll through two at this time.
Okay. I can do this one and Infinity Wars.
I feel like we should do two this time, two next hour, because we got four to do, right?
Yeah. I'll save Infinity War for next one because it's kind of bigger. So
okay.
Okay.
You do what you got to do. So what movie are we at right now?
Black Panther.
Black Panther. I saw this one. Cody saw this one. Cody, what hat topic do we have?
House fire. Save yourself or save who you love most.
Cam, proceed.
All right, Black Panther. So it basically opened up, and T'Challa, who's Black Panther, his dad, back in 1992, he ends up finding out his brother had been helping Ulysses Claw steal vibranium out of Wakanda, so he ends up killing his own brother and left his brother's son. He was undercover in America. He just left him. So go back to present day. Black Panther's like fresh out of like being in the Captain America Civil War movie, and he's going back home to become king because, you know, his dad died in Civil War. So he's back to become king, and he has to win like these fights from challengers. So he beats this one guy in Baku who's from a different tribe, and he spares his life, becomes king. Claw and this guy who goes by Killmonger. They're stealing some Wakandan artifact, and they steal a Wakandan artifact, and so T'Challa and them are like, oh, we need to go get this guy because he's been stealing vibranium from us for years. Like, all right, we need to go get him. So him, his general Okoye, and his like ex girlfriend Nakia, they go and try and stop him in Korea while he's doing like a weapons deal to an undercover CIA agent Everett Ross. So they end up getting there. They end up capturing Claw.
Who is going to save themselves in a fire instead of their loved ones?
Me.
Like, your loved ones? Like,
preservation. Save who you love most. You get to pick one person.
The person you love the most. Who is actually going to save themselves over a loved one?
It could be your mother. It could be your wife. It could be your girlfriend.
Really?
Well, I guess some people listening, though, probably have kids. So I'm assuming that's your greatest love. I don't have kids, but you know, if it's like your son.
Am I allowed to ask you right now who you love the most? Like, are you allowed, do you feel okay answering that? Like, who you love the most in the world right now? Do you have somebody you consider you love the most?
Myself.
All right, so they end up capturing Claw, and they're holding him in the CIA office. Killmonger shows up, busts him out. Everett Ross ends up getting shot. The only people who can save him is Wakanda because they have the best technology in the world, so they end up taking him over to Wakanda, and they're like, oh, why are you bringing this random white dude over here? Like, what's going on? They're like, he's a good guy. Like, he's a good friend. Like, we're going to bring him in here. And at this time, nobody knows Wakanda's, like, technologically advanced like this. Everybody thinks they're just some poor African country. But they're actually, like, the most advanced country in the world. So, they're over there. Killmonger ends up turning on Claw, kills him, brings his body to Wakanda. And some of the, like, people in Wakanda that have, like, starting to doubt T'Challa's Black Panther are like, oh, see, like, this guy ended up killing Claw. You couldn't kill Claw. Like, we're going to kind of side with him. And the guy ends up being the son, basically T'Challa's cousin that his dad left in America way back in the day. And so they're like, oh, crap, he actually has a claim to the throne. So then they end up doing, like, the combat fight thing for the throne. He ends up whooping T'Challa.
For the throne, huh?
Yeah, for the throne. And he throws him off a waterfall. So you're like, oh, crap, now Killmonger's king. They eat these heart-shaped herbs, which give him the powers of the Black Panther and makes him go on, like, this big, like, acid trip.
Did you know he was going to win? Did you know that was going to be the way the story went, that Killmonger was going to win that first one? Because I remember kind of thinking it, but I was also surprised. Like, man, he beat his ass.
The bad guy threw him off the water.
Yeah, yeah, at the point, like, beat in his the ass. Movie, I mean, I was like, okay, I guess further the plot.
That's
but yeah,
be
not,
the
like,
plot.
Going into it, yeah. I wasn't, like,
they should have waited and saved that scene for later.
Yeah,
like an hour or 15 minutes into the movie.
But yeah,
or
you're like, oh crap, like T'Challa just got thrown off a waterfall. Like,
you had your biggest dilemma at the start of the movie, basically. Right.
What do you mean the dilemma?
Or not dilemma, but your problem.
I will say, yeah, I kind of know what you're saying. Spoiler alert, I feel like that fight was better than the end fight that they had at the end of the movie.
Yeah, it was with the no powers and just it was a really sweet fight scene. Yeah,
I thought that fight scene was way better than
Killmonger's like the Dame Lillard of the Marvel movies. Like he was a killer. He was there for one purpose.
And from Oakland.
And he was from Oakland in the movie.
Like Dame Lillard said, you know what this is. Yeah, this is Oakland.
I don't want problems with Oakland.
I like the last scene when it shows back in Oakland.
Hold on. Spoiler. Okay,
So he throws him off the mountain. Oh, crap. And Killmonger's like, okay, y'all have like kept all this technology to yourself all these years. And there's all these like black people getting like, you know, like racism stuff all around the world. Like, we're going to go and distribute these weapons to everybody. And everybody's like, well, you're king, so we got to kind of follow you now. Meanwhile, so he takes that herb that gives him the Black Panther powers, and he's like, all right, you need to burn the rest of these because I don't want anybody else getting this. Nakia, T'Challa's friend, ended up stealing one before he burned them all. They end up finding out the Jabari tribe and the M'Baku guy who he spared at the beginning of the movie found him at the bottom of the river, saved his life. So they end up giving him that herb they kept, gets him his powers back. He's able to like recover, and he shows back up, and it's a big fight scene. All around Wakanda, like all the different tribes are fighting. Killmonger, Black Panther, his little sister Shuri, who runs all like the technology and stuff. She's getting.
She was a really good part of the movie.
Yeah, she was funny. She's smart. She basically like created his suit and everything, so she was pretty big. But yeah, big fight scene. Everybody's fighting. The like whole tribes have turned against each other, pretty much trying to decide who's gonna win. They're like shooting down planes, but they're trying to fly out with the Wakandan technology, all that stuff. So ends up T'Challa ends up beating Killmonger this time when they both have powers and suits. He ends up
underwhelming. Yeah, I was really underwhelmed with that one.
I was, in my opinion, I thought T'Challa was way cooler in Civil War than he was in this movie, and it kind of disappointed me.
It's kind of a hot take.
But yeah, so it was a good fight scene, but yeah, a little disappointing.
Scale of 1 to 10, how important is this movie?
I'd say 5. It kind of just set up the Wakandan, so you knew where Wakanda was going into the next movie. And
is that where the fight is in Infinity War?
Yeah.
Is it in Wakanda?
So it kind of like set up the scenery, stuff like that. And like Cody said, they ended up back in Oakland, and they built like a facility in Oakland, and it was super cool, you know, introduce the kids, and they tell, at the end of the movie, they tell the world, like, you know what, like, we're not actually what you think we are, we're actually a really cool country, we're gonna expand our horizons now.
He decided to give back to the hood a little bit.
And in the extra credit scene, you see they fixed Bucky, they got the mind washing out of his mind, and he's in Wakanda, like, chilling right now.
How do you feel about the people who say Killmonger was kind of, not wrong, I guess? They understood Killmonger's anger.
Yeah, abandoned him as a kid.
They abandoned him as a kid, and they didn't take him back.
And just left him with his dad dead. Killed his dad and just left him there in Oakland. He was like, he was under 10. Like, he was a young kid.
I feel like he was onto something a little bit. Like, hey, you guys are really rich and powerful, yet you don't help us type of thing. I kind of understood. Now, I think, obviously, he went about it in a weird, wrong way.
Yeah, you know, like, his dad grew up, like, telling him that, like, Wakanda's a like great place. I mean, Wakanda's come and kills dad and leave him alone, and he's, you know, he was super hurt.
You understood the hatred.
Yeah,
kind of understood, and I think that is what makes a good villain is when you can relate to him. Rumors of Michael B. Jordan being in Black Panther 2, that seems really dumb to me. I feel like they should just let him die.
He died at the end of the movie.
Right.
Unless Endgame does some weird stuff with time travel or something, I don't.
Could they give him something to eat or something?
They
make him eat the herbs or whatever?
But he's dead, so yeah. I don't know if he could, like, I don't know if they could bring him back. Yeah.
throw me over the ocean with my ancestors. Throw me over the boat in the ocean.
It was a good movie.
So you saving a loved one or yourself in a house fire?
Is it like my apartment? Or am I back home? Because if it's my apartment, I'm grabbing my fare and I'm getting out of there.
I mean, what's the difference?
Because in my house, I got two brothers, I got a mom, dad, I got to make a decision.
You don't want to have to.
Yeah, I don't know if I can make that call. I do have a fire escape ladder though at my house though, so we may be straight.
In my scenario, you're in the house with just the one person you love most.
Because that would be tougher. I feel, honestly, in Cam's scenario, if you're in there with your whole family, like, you might just have to save yourself because then you have to make the tough decision, and then like you've kind of you got to live with killing the other people.
I would hope my loved one is smart enough to get out of a house that's on fire by themselves.
You got to save your loved one. Yeah, I would hate to be in a position where you have to pick one loved one out of four, though.
That's a horrific
scenario.
This was not meant to be a depressing topic. It was simply you or the person you love most dearly.
I don't know if I like your hat topic so far. This was really morbid.
There's some more lighthearted ones in there. It's a tough call. You got to make a tough decision.
I'm saving my loved one.
So you're dying in the house fire.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you got to.
But what good does that do you in the, you know, in the long run?
You love someone, you take care of them. That's kind of the idea of it.
You die for them?
That's the idea of it if you actually love someone.
I really like living.
You want me to hop into another one real quick? Or no?
Maybe I don't love anyone enough.
Maybe that's the other issue. We're at the weird spot where, like, you got another one you can go to now? In my mind, we were doing hour three, but because you said you needed more time, but go.
Well, no, I'm good. Like, I was just going to skip Infinity War.
This is your barbecue, Cyrus.
Yeah, so I'm going to skip to Ant-Man and the Wasp. It actually came out after Infinity War.
I feel like this one's not that important here. Pick another hat.
I'm going to go kind of quick with it. Most of it takes place before Infinity War.
All right, so now we are looking at, what is it, Ant-Man and the Wasp? And this is, who is the woman in Ant-Man and the Wasp?
Let's pick a different one.
Hope Van Dyne, she's a.
Is she in other things?
She was in the first Ant-Man, but she didn't have a suit yet.
Rather have Batman skills, money, and lifestyle, or end crime around the world for good, but be poor and unnoticed. That's a good one.
Ooh, that is a good one, isn't
Batman.
It?
I'm picking Batman.
I feel like this is tough for you because you're writing all these just so you can say that you would rather be Batman instead of helping the world. I feel like all these are going to be moral dilemmas where you just set yourself up to take
I set them up to be good conversation because I figured on a lot of them you would take the good side. You'd be the good guy. You know what I mean?
Nah, I'm taking Batman in this one too.
Are you?
Yeah, like, no.
So you'll save your loved one from a house fire, but you're not going to end crime around the world.
Well, look. Let's keep it 100.
What constitutes crime? Are you talking like littering or just like...
It's just you can end all crime around the world. Here's what
you're basically fighting crime... The same crime Batman fights, except you don't get to be
without
Batman.
Without being rich and being
right.
Batman.
But
that
here's the
like
thing. Just full disclosure, because we love our audience, we're honest with our audience. My hand-eye coordination
first
is unmatched. Yeah, the hand-eye coordination is unmatched. It was just floating off. I just grabbed it without looking. No big deal. So I guess
maybe you are Batman.
maybe it's not even hand-eye coordination. Maybe it's just instincts. I don't know.
John is a freak.
Caught it. Ben Lee, thank you for noticing.
Benley's been complimenting you a lot lately.
Keeping it real here, a part of saving your loved one from the burning house fire is that they live on carrying on your legacy, knowing, hey, this man loved me more than anybody. He died for me, right? Like,
you die a hero, but you never know about it.
Right, but your legacy lives on. She has to tell all of her future lovers, the love of my life died in that fire protecting me.
But eventually she dies and they die and everyone dies and you have no legacy.
I mean, that's the same as you living in later. I mean, what good's an extra 15 years going to do for you?
I'm just saying, I don't think legacy's all that
I want to be Batman.
Ant-Man and the Wasp. Okay, so it's like 2 years
do not
after
be
Civil
Ant-Man.
War.
If it was Ant-Man or Batman, I'm saying I'll be
so
poor and fix
Scott
the world.
Scott Lang, who's Ant-Man, had been on house arrest for the past 2 years because he helped Cap in Civil War and, you know, broke the Accords, all that stuff. So he's a few days away from getting out of house arrest. He has a vision where he sees... Hank Pym, who's the original Ant-Man, sees his wife, who's been trapped in the quantum realm since like 1987. He sees a vision of her, so he calls Hank, who they don't really talk to anymore because he's pissed that he did the thing with Cap, and it ended up making Hank Pym and Hope. They are both fugitives too because they had the technology that kind of helped him break the Accords. So they're on the run too. So he ends up calling them out of the blue, and so they end up kidnapping him, leaving somebody like a decoy in his house so the house arrest thing doesn't go off. But they're like, all right, we need your help so we can build this because you have a vision. We need what you have in your head so we can, because we're building a tunnel that can get us to the quantum realm to get Hank's wife out. So they go through all this. They're getting these supplies and stuff. Hope has a wasp suit now, which is, it's basically an Ant-Man suit, but she has wings and blasters. And they're getting a part for their device they need, and this person who goes by Ghost shows up, and they can phase through stuff.
Cody, you going to be Batman, I assume, as well?
Yeah, I would be, But basically what we're saying is we would rather have superpowers and be rich and famous.
Well, technically Batman does not have superpowers. He's just peak human. Just really rich.
I mean, he can fly off buildings.
But he can't fly. He has a cape.
Well, whatever. But we get all his power, all his equipment, all his money, his lifestyle.
Which some people make that a criticism of Batman. I know this is a Marvel topic, but yeah. I always thought that was cooler about Batman because he kind of signified that anyone could do it. Now, granted, you had to be rich, but like, we all could technically be Batman. Yeah. We didn't have to be born an alien like Superman.
And trained and knew every martial art in the world.
Yeah, like, sure. Like, I mean, you're going to have to go and learn things and be rich, but you don't have to be bitten by a spider or, you know, born as an alien. You could just train really hard and try hard.
Think about what we're saying, though. We would rather have that lifestyle all to ourselves than to end crime around the world.
I mean, Batman was a servant as well. Like, he was out there putting his life on the line. Like, I don't know if you saw The Dark Knight Rises, but, I mean, he broke his back. Alfred was always like, hey, man, you okay? Everything good with you? You know, you're really taking a toll on your body. It wasn't like he was just chilling. He was putting in work, too.
He gets beat down a lot. Okay, so, yeah, Ghost shows up, steals the parts, steals, like, their lab, which they shrink down using, like, pin particles. So, steals all their stuff. So, like, oh, crap, what are we going to do? We got to find it. So, they go talk to this guy named Bill Foster who tells them kind of how they can find the stuff. So, they go. They find a Ghost. She's like, hey, I'm going to use this stuff. She's a... had quantum problems to where she's about to, like, die. So she's trying to use, like, their technology to save herself. So they end up fighting her again. They get away from her, get the lab back. They're finishing up the tunnel. Scott has to run back home because the cops are coming because they, think he's not on house arrest anymore. So he leaves. Ghost shows up. Hope and Hank get arrested again. Scott comes back, breaks them out. They end up finishing the tunnel. They get into the quantum realm. They find Hank's wife. She comes out. She has kind of like weird quantum powers now. And she figures out how to help the ghost person. The ghost person kind of turns good, comes on their side. And everything was good with that. And so basically the whole movie was just them trying to get into the quantum realm and kind of introduce the quantum realm as different like dimensions and aspects. But that was pretty much the movie.
Scale of 1 to 10, this one does not... Is this one important?
I'd say 6 because of the quantum realm is supposed to be a big part of Endgame. So we'll see if that's actually true or not. But there's a reason they strategically put it between Infinity War and Endgame, in my opinion.
So you think Ant-Man is the secret to winning?
There's an extra credit scene, and I'm going to come back to it after I do Infinity War because it kind of deals with that.
Hey, if you're listening now and you want to hear that, hour 3 is where it's coming, folks. You don't want to miss Cam wrapping up the Marvel Universe, the Marvel Cinema Universe. We got 2 left, right?
Yes, sir.
Infinity War and
Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel. Is Captain Marvel good? Just thumbs up or thumbs down?
Yeah, it was a good movie. I enjoyed it.
Brie Larson's come a long way.
Yeah,
I loved Brie Larson. I loved.
I didn't realize she was in 21 Jump Street, and I was like, whoa.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That's the first time I saw her, and. Did you guys ever watch what was the name of that show? It had the redheaded dad. They were mean kids. It used to come on Fox. Hot mom, really hot mom, but like secret, sneaky hot mom, like MILFy type mom. It was like Grounded or something. Was there a show called Grounded?
You thinking of Will and Grace?
No, I'm not thinking of Will and Grace. Was it Grounded?
I'm not sure.
No one knows what show I'm talking about. Fox. Grounded for Life? Is that the name of it? Grounded for Life.
No one has ever watched a Fox
Grounded
drama.
For Life. That was a fun show. Grounded for Life was a fun show. You're not going to come on here and make fun of Grounded for Life. That was
a
great show.
Every Fox show in primetime ever has been canceled. Every single one of them. Family Guy makes fun of it all the time.
I was going to say The Simpsons, but that's not primetime. Guess.
Apparently, Brie Larson has a close friendship with Samuel L. Jackson.
Come here. Do you think this woman looks like?
Movie.
Do you think this girl, this woman, looks like Brie Larson a little bit? Do you see what I'm talking about? Looks like Brie Larson, right?
I think Brie Larson is absolutely beautiful.
He says no. We don't think. I mean, I know it doesn't look like Brie Larson. I'm saying like Brie Larson's mom.
Oh yeah, I could see that.
I mean, I know Brie Larson's a lot younger. I'm saying the whole time I watched 21 Jump Street, I was convinced that this was her mom, and I was like, I used to love this woman. 21 Jump Street. Great movie. Yeah, Brie Larson, movie. I always thought it was weird. Like, we talked about Arya, right? We talked about Arya having sex, and we're like, hey, you're a little kid, but you're not. You're 21, 22. When Jonah Hill kisses Brie Larson at the end of that movie, is that not weird? Because she's a high school senior, and he's, like, been out of high school for, like, 8, 9 years. Yeah, like,
They never confirmed she was 18 or anything, so you're kind of like,
I mean, even if she was 18, is it still not weird?
Still
because
weird.
I feel like if you're, like, 27, 28, been out of school for a while, you got
to
go.
I think he went to college. Well, he didn't. I think he went to college and everything. Because in the second one, they're like, oh, we're going back to college. So I think he had been through college.
I mean, he was at least been out of school for a while because, I mean, they had to have some type of character arc. And I just thought it was really weird because I feel like once you get over we can all agree once you get over the age of 25, you can't be kissing on 18-year-olds, right? Like, you got to stay 21. 21 and up once you get to 25. Do we agree on that or no? Yeah. Cody doesn't agree on that. Ben shaking his head yes, Cam.
I'm not 18 yet, so
18's the legal age. What do you think Lee Clark Mitchell would think about that?
I'm in on 21.
I feel like at a certain age, you're like, hey, no more 18-year-olds.
If a hot 19-year-old comes up to you, you're going to make out with her. Ben.
I'm 23, so I'm clear on that one.
Yeah, but you're going to do it. Like, let's not
I'm not 25.
This is weird. I don't like where this is headed. I should have known better than to ask this question.
What, 19? There are old rock stars who date 19-year-olds.
You can't equate real life to rock stars. You got to stop doing that.
Yeah, you can. What do you think Lee Clark Mitchell would think about it?
Lee Clark Mitchell was an intelligent man, and she was 25. Your rock stars used to do this with 13, 14, and 15-year-old girls.
Well, that was back in the day with
rock stars.
Chuck Berry.
Yeah, they're rock stars. Elvis, what do you think happened with Elvis and Priscilla? How old do you think Priscilla was?
Well, it's a different society 16. Now. It's a much different society.
That's all I'm saying. You keep saying rock stars did it. Yeah. Rock stars were really weird, too.
They did a lot of things.
Hour 2 in the books, hour 3 on deck. Stick with us as Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.